everybody. Welcome to Dead Meat, episode 20. As always, your host is Palmer. With me, I've got Alex and Sam.
He's not. You're not calling him your friend this time.
Yeah. Well, I feel like we're at episode 20. We can upgrade him to co-host.
I was just going to say that we're not actually friends, so it's not a big deal.
With episode 20, we've got a special surprise for everybody. We're introducing our first guests with us. We've got director Christopher G. Moore. He's done a whole bunch of indie films recently. Say hi, Chris.
Hey, glad to be on here. Appreciate you guys let me be a guest on your wonderful podcast.
Yeah, thanks for being on.
Yeah, thank you so much. We're so excited to have you.
And we've got mutual friend, and they worked together on Gut Punched recently. One of the actresses, Grace, is also with us. Say hi, Grace.
Hi.
So yeah, we're gonna chat with them for the first half. So instead of doing our normal horror headlines, we're just gonna run some questions by them and see what
y'all are all about.
Yeah, exactly. And then the main event for this week is gonna be My Bloody Valentine.
Topical.
Yeah, the 1981 release, not the 2009 remake.
Nah, fuck that.
Yeah, I don't know. One of these days we'll jump into that one. That one was just as well received, I think.
I tried to watch it.
Was not a fan.
I couldn't get it.
I feel like I was watching an episode of Dawson's Creek. Sorry, what were you going to say?
I was going to say I could have watched the 2009 version for free, but I paid $3 to rent the 1999 version for you guys.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Where did you go? Like Amazon or something?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I guess the 2009 version was available like all over the place, much more prominently.
Although it's best to see in the 3D version.
Absolutely.
Oh, I don't know. I'm a purist, so I mean, I always believe in going for the original if you can. So it was fine.
I feel like 3D gives me a headache. I feel like an old lady.
I feel like if I didn't wear glasses already, I'd be fine with 3D glasses on top of it. But like putting those on top of like my real glasses just gives,
if you're going to do that, just commit and wear like 7 pairs of glasses.
And I was meaning the 2009 version was done in 3D. That's not
right.
the one we're watching.
Right, yeah, the original one definitely didn't have any 3D stuff in it.
They didn't have the
budget. Although there would have been a couple cool scenes.
That's like old enough where it would have been those red and blue 3D glasses, too,
right.
The paper ones, which were dope.
So yeah, Grace, why don't we start with you? You were an actress in one of Chris's movies recently, like we said, Gut Punched. He's getting ready to do, I guess, a festival circuit, right, Chris?
Yeah, it's already been... it's already screened at 2 different festivals, and we have 2 coming up back-to-back weekends, and that will definitely be more later on this year.
Okay. So, Grace, what was it like working with Chris? What was your favorite part of the process, I guess?
It was really fun. I actually had never done a film before, and so this was like my first film experience. I was super jazzed and like really like, yes, I get to finally be in a film. I mean, I'd done stage acting before. I was a theater kid in high school, but like I'd been looking for, you know, I'd wanted to get that first film experience for a while. And then I actually just saw on Facebook in like a local artists group that Chris was looking for some people, like young women, to be in a film. And I think the way he described it in the ad was like, a bachelorette party with a gothy twist.
I love that.
That's right, really, that works. It's a good way to put it, actually.
Yeah, and so I was kind of like, I don't know what that means, but okay. I hung with the goth kids in high school, so that's fine with me. I get there, and there wasn't really like an audition process or anything. We had just kind of like, I think... It was just like send some photos of the different wardrobe that you might wear. And Chris had like selected a few dresses from what I had that he thought might be good for the look of the film.
Uh-huh.
But the role that I had in Gut Punched wasn't really a speaking role anyway. So it didn't really require me to see the script or anything. It was just like, we're going to do this scene, come down. So, you know, I showed up and it was kind of like a surprise, but I was down for the ride and it was really fun.
So what was your immediate reaction once you saw a guy splayed out on a table, I guess, with his with his gut ripped open.
He's a punch bowl.
And being used as a punch bowl. Yeah. What was your reaction to that?
Well, see, we got to see that being set up, actually. So that was, it was interesting. When we finally saw the finished product, it was really amazing. But we all knew, we had gotten there before it was set up. So we knew what was going to happen. We had been kind of like briefed on the scene.
Right.
So it wasn't like a huge surprise when we saw, but it was still like, oh, wow, it actually looks cool.
It's very
they actually... they had some trouble with the effect, which Chris can maybe talk about a little if he wants to.
Yeah, lean into it.
We would love to hear about that.
Well, first of all, the guy who did the effects, we were a little bit behind on trying to get the stuff done because he had like two different effects that he was working on. That one of the effects he had to keep remolding.
Mm-hmm.
There's a scene where the girl has horns coming out of her eyes.
Right.
With that, you know, it took a long time to get everything set up because we made, we basically took a table and then we put like a thin sheet of plywood over top of it that we had a hole cut out for his body,
mm-hmm.
his top of his upper body to be out. And he was actually sitting in like a lounge, like one of those, like a sun chair type thing.
Oh, okay.
Like a bush chair, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We wanted to be comfortable because basically that whole scene was shot. He was in that thing like all day long.
Yeah, we felt bad for him, or I felt bad for him at least. But like, shout out to him. Let's give him a shout out, Tom Major, because like that kid is a professional,
right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. His arms and legs were going numb and
They had to set up like a ball fan for him underneath the table because it was covered with this like cheap plastic tablecloth that was not like well ventilated at all. So he's literally like dying in there. We were all like, you know, people are feeding him like little sips of water, little tiny bites of a granola bar. But he was like, no, no, I don't want anything because he knew he couldn't get up and go to the bathroom.
Right.
But then, we had the scene where we made this. This sort of Kool-Aid.
Yeah, what was that?
It was actual Kool-Aid.
Kool-Aid. But I think the problem was we had like this darker cherry Kool-Aid that we added that didn't have sugar in it.
Uh-huh.
So we added so much of that when the scene where they had to drink out of it, it wasn't very tasty.
Right.
Yeah,
that's where their acting ability had to come into play. Mm-hmm. Act like, that's delicious, and then we cut, and they're like, "Oh, that tastes like shit."
Yeah.
One of the main issues was that when we filled it with this liquid, there was like a pinhole somewhere in the practical effect to where it was leaking into his crotch, so we had to like put a bowl underneath it. So we had to figure out a way to fix that. So that's why that scene. The Kool-Aid is very low in there.
Right.
Because we didn't want it to overflow and because we shot in my house.
Oh, that was in your house?
It to be blood red, so.
Stain your carpet.
Dedication, right?
Yeah, that's some next level dedication, shooting that in your house. It's hilarious.
Yeah, actually, one of the other actresses, when we were wrapping up and like we'd finally gotten all of our scenes done, it's kind of late at night, and we're packing up our stuff, and one of them said, like, man, you can tell that this guy is legit, though, because his house is trashed.
How long did it take you to clean it up?
I don't think it's still recovered from that.
R.I.P. Nice house.
It's a process.
Yeah. That, well, I guess, Grace, had you seen any of Chris's other movies?
No, I have not before, and I still haven't. I actually still haven't seen Gut Punched, but I'm going to at one of the upcoming festivals, not this weekend, but the next.
Oh, okay, that'll be your first time. It's very good.
Thanks.
I'm one of those people that, like, I really want people to see it. I think the only few people that saw it initially before we screened it were the two main actors.
Okay.
Sarah Korski, who's actually living in L.A., mm-hmm. who flew out on her own dime to be in the film.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
And then Tom Major, who's, I think he's living in Atlanta. I did let them see it, especially considering the whole sex montage. I wanted to make sure they're okay with that. But normally I like to do, when we have events and stuff, I want the actors and people involved to come out so they can see it, you know, with an audience and see it for the first time so they can see their performances. I like to do that as much as possible.
Absolutely. So you said that it's going to two more festivals. Which ones are those?
Well, this weekend, it's upcoming weekend. It's going to be playing at Mad Monster Party in Charlotte.
Okay.
It's three screenings. It's going to be screening on Friday at 10 p.m., Saturday at noon, and then Sunday at 4 p.m.
Awesome.
And then the next weekend, it's going to be at Mysticon, and that'll be screening Saturday at 11 p.m. during the spinning splatter.
I'm not sure what that is, but it sounds amazing.
It's supposed to be. I guess it's going to have other short films in that block. Maybe there's a lot of blood flowing.
Awesome.
Oh yeah. And I'm actually going to be at Mysticon too, so I'm going to try and catch that, and y'all may see me there if you're going to be there.
Awesome. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
So Grace, what are some of your favorite horror films or directors? Do you have any?
So I actually can't say, like, I'm really into nerdy stuff, but I can't say that, like, horror and slasher is really my thing. That being said, I like bad movies, so I have seen a lot of things like that. Mm-hmm. But I also like really good stuff. I guess my taste in horror is more towards the offbeat and, like, the creepy. Like, I really like, I would say probably my favorite horror movie is maybe something like Let the Right One In.
Oh, mm-hmm. That's a good one. That's a great one. Do you like the original or the remake?
Always the original.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Really, yeah. I actually really like foreign films, so I enjoy watching films in other languages.
Well, you've got great taste. That's one of my absolute favorites, actually.
It's very highbrow.
Yeah, I guess so. So you said this was your first film experience, but I know you had done some extras work also. You were in Homeland recently.
Yeah, actually, I was an extra on Homeland. I've been in two different scenes for the current season, and you might be able to see, I'm in episodes 2 and 5. Mm-hmm. But again, you're going to have to look hard for me because they're crowd scenes, mm-hmm. but it's really fun. It's actually a really cool chance to like network with other actors.
I bet. I fucking love Homeland.
And you did all that when they were filming here in Richmond, correct?
Yeah.
How was that?
It was interesting. Actually, I'm not sure I should really say any like more details about it because I am under a non-disclosure agreement. Uh-huh. But I know that because the season is out now, I'm allowed to say that I was on it, but okay. I'm not going to, I don't think I can like talk about the shoot itself.
Okay.
But it's a
cool show. You guys should check it out. I would love for there to be more things like that shot around this area. I know that one of the reasons why they shoot in Richmond, and they've shot in Raleigh-Durham before as well, mm-hmm. like the type of architecture that we have in the South here, mm-hmm. it looks very much like Washington, D.C., but it's not as expensive.
It definitely does. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So what made you decide to try your hand at acting? What made you decide to jump into that? I know you had done a stint in school in China and a few other things. What made you decide to come back and start this?
Well, so leaving school in China was more about not wanting to be in school anymore than not wanting to be in China anymore, because I love China. It's really a great place. And if you have the chance to go, you definitely should. Mm. But yeah, I was just really tired of school, and acting is kind of it's been a personal dream for a long time. So I decided while I still have the chance, I should go for it.
Absolutely. I don't think a lot of people would take that kind of a plunge, but mm-mm. but you're doing it. And I got to say, it's impressive.
It's ballsy.
Mm-hmm. Aw.
So Chris.
Yes.
Let's start with the most obvious question. What are some of your favorite films and directors? What's your inspiration?
Oh, geez. How long is this podcast?
Right. We have
as
been
long
known
as
to
you
go.
Need it to be.
Yeah, we've been known to go rather long.
I'm inspired by a lot of things. I mean, I'm a huge Star Wars geek. Uh-huh. Star Wars is the film. A New Hope. That first film was mm-hmm. the film that sort of opened up my mind to sort of like how films work and how they can open your imagination and make you believe in places that don't exist and characters that don't exist and tell you stories that can sort of affect you in different ways, and how films can make an impression on you, can make you laugh, cry, jump, scream, run out of the theater. And so I would say that that's probably an initial inspiration. I mean, as for directors, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Evil Dead 2. It's like my favorite horror film.
I did notice that you were watching that the other day. I think you made a Twitter post or something. I got to say, that's another one of my favorites also. It's definitely a great movie.
We just reviewed the first Evil Dead for the podcast that I'm on, Decades of Horror.
I gotta start listening to this.
Absolutely.
For Gruesome Magazine. I'm one of the co-hosts on it because I'm a huge fan of 80s horror.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Growing up, I may look younger than what I am, but when I was growing up, I was old enough to go to like video stores and I rented every horror film that came out. Mm-hmm. And so I'm a huge fan of films from that time period.
We're all of the video store era also.
I was young enough.
I'm also just barely of the video store era.
We were at the age where we had to sneak them into non-horror movie boxes so that our parents would let us rent them.
How many times I did that? Oh, geez.
I just want to watch Angels in the Outfield.
I'm the age where I used to record horror movies off of like HBO onto VHS.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And to watch, you know, if I wanted to record certain things. I'm a huge fan of Silence of the Lambs. I think it's one of the best horror thrillers that's ever been created. It's a perfect film in my opinion. So I love that film. I mean, I love a lot of directors that have like a visual flair, have a style that's, you know, that when you watch their film, you know, it's their film,
right.
You know, like directors like Tim Burton, or Wes Anderson or Paul Thomas Anderson or any of those, type of directors. I like those.
Right.
So I like a lot of different things. And Nightmare on Elm Street was a big influence on me as a kid. Just a horror character that can sort of get you at your most vulnerable point when you're asleep. I was a huge Freddy nerd growing up. I had a corner of my room dedicated to Freddy. My mom thought I was going to turn into a serial killer.
Right.
I had my license plate had NITMARE.
Nice.
I had a Freddy hanging from my rearview mirror. I played Freddy in a haunted house. And as you could probably ascertain from that, I didn't date in high school. But I was a huge Nightmare on Elm Street fan growing up. So I have a lot of interests other than horror, you know, from action. I'm a huge fan of Edgar Wright. I thought Baby Driver was amazing.
Really good.
Guillermo del Toro, I'm a huge fan of. I had like one thousandth of his talent and his attention to detail, I would be good, because he's one of those guys that like his hand is in so many different things, from the artwork to everything. That's just like, I want to be him. I want to be him when I grow up.
Absolutely. So did you always know that you wanted to direct films, or was that something that came later to you in life?
I've always had an interest in filmmaking and making films, to where like when other people were like swooning over the newest, you know, teen actor.
Right.
I was like, Steven Spielberg. Tom Savini. I was all about the directors, the people doing the effects.
Uh-huh.
I was always interested in how they made certain things. I had a whole old VHS tape where they showed how they made the effects in Empire Strikes Back.
Mm-hmm.
I had an old VHS tape, Tom Savini, how he was like creating some of the effects for things like Creepshow and stuff. I've always had an interest. I used to read Fangoria. Cinema Fantastique, Gorezone. I used to read a lot of the magazines back in the day, just learning the process behind how they make these films. You know, most of my film school has been from watching the special features on DVDs and Blu-rays, learning the process, you know, learning all how certain things happen, whether it be based on lots of preparation or maybe they just improvise it on the moment. So I just have an interest in how they make stuff. And So ever since I was a little kid, I wanted to tell stories and make movies.
That's awesome.
I guess your movies are obviously all smaller films. They're all like smaller budgets and stuff. If you didn't have financial limitations, what would you want to do next? What would your grandiose vision, I guess, be for your ultimate film?
Oh, geez. I don't know. I mean, you know, I do have certain types of genre films that I do want to make features of. Like, mm-hmm. I have a haunted house feature I want to do at some point.
Awesome.
We want to make a feature version of my film, short film, Knob Goblins, at some point as well.
I would totally watch that.
I would too, actually.
With that film, when it was on the film festival circuit, everybody was like, kept asking when we're going to make a feature. And uh-huh. I'd take the creature around with me and have people taking selfies with it. Awesome. And my Instagram for a long time was Nobby from the movie.
Is that what he's called? Nobby.
Throughout on the film festival circuit, you know, whether he's like getting ready in the bathroom or trying to bite people in the lobby. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would love to tell stories on the level of Guillermo del Toro. You know, if they ever wanted me to make, I would love to make a Star Wars film.
Shit. Yeah.
Now that you know, but I would love to do I'd love to do a horror Star Wars film.
Oh, yeah.
There was a couple of books that aren't part of the canon. There was one called Death Troopers that was like zombies on a Star Destroyer. I would love to tell a story like that. But I mean, I would definitely love to tell like a different Star Wars story, or I'd love to be what the person they call to do a new version of Nightmare on Elm Street. Mm. I think too many people are afraid to sort of tell a new, you know, a new type of story based on that.
Right.
Okay.
I have one that Chris mentioned on social media a while ago that I know I'm interested in, because I remember a while ago you said that you had an idea for a sci-fi some kind of a film project that was about an all-female crew of a starship.
Yeah. I mean, I have one idea that's, you know, as somebody who's a huge fan of Star Wars, and mm-hmm. I always wanted to make a film where I can create my own universe.
Right.
And I would love to do my version of sort of like a sci-fi story. But I think too many times in certain sci-fi shows or movies, they don't really give enough focus on like female characters as much.
Absolutely.
And I wanted to do a story where there's a ship, like a whole ship of female for the female crew,
mm-hmm.
and they're chasing after a serial killer in space.
I would totally watch that.
Like a serial killer has escaped from like a prison ship,
mm-hmm.
and they have to. And they're almost like these sort of like police bounty hunters that go after them.
Awesome. Yeah, see, I just saw on Chris's like Facebook, all female starship crew, and I was like, when can I audition?
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, I have actually. There's another idea. If I had the money, and that I scrapped it a while back because I realized it was going to be too big for my first film, but I do have a B movie horror musical I want to do at some point.
Love it.
Sign me up for that too.
So, but that's going to require a lot of, that has like a huge battle at the end of it. And I wanted to do a musical. I'm not like a normal, like, you know, when you're a jet type musical guy. Right. I don't like that stuff, but I do like horror musicals, and I wanted to do one where the music is very contemporary and fun.
Uh-huh.
And it's one of those things where you leave the movie like, oh, I want to buy that soundtrack. And that's a fun song that I'd love to listen to or dance to.
Absolutely.
So I'd want something like that where there'd be like an 80s rap song or mm-hmm. be like a hair band song. It'd be all kinds of different types of fun songs in it. So
that is fun.
That I'll do that at some point, but I realized in the process of making it, it was more headache and it would cost too much money.
Right.
Consider I'm lucky if I throw enough money together just to make a short film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, let's jump into some general questions for both of you. We noticed that you're both pretty into cosplay. You guys have done some interesting costumes amongst the both of you. What's your experience like with that? What made you both decide to get into that? Whoever wants to lead off.
Well, I think Chris is actually more of a cosplayer than me. I'm sort of a shit cosplayer.
I've seen some of your
your shit.
I've seen some of
really,
your shit. And I think it's
like
good.
Not impressive. No, like most of my cosplays are thrift store cosplays.
Hey, you know, you gotta start somewhere,
still
right?
Counts.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's true.
It's
I don't
more
really
than what
have
I've done.
I'm still living the starving artist life, kind of, so I don't really have the money for full-on cosplay like you would want to do.
Right. Not everybody can be professional, though.
Sure. But I do really enjoy wearing costumes, and I love the, you know, fantabulous looks and stuff. If somebody were to want to cast me in something that required me to wear a very elaborate costume, I would be totally okay with that.
Yeah. I'm imagining some sort of like period piece, but also set in space.
Yeah. But I love dress up, so I like to, especially when I do go to cons, and I do go to cons sometimes. I feel underdressed if I'm not in costume. So,
I bet.
Do you have any favorites? Do you have anything that you, if you could create something absolutely professional looking, do you have anything that you'd wanted to cosplay as?
I don't know. Actually, I was thinking. It would be really fun to cosplay as the Cylon, the sexy Cylon from Battlestar Galactica. I've been watching that again recently.
Okay, I'm sure you'll earn lots of street cred with that that suggestion, yeah. Actually.
I feel like nobody's really cosplaying that, so it would be fun.
Yeah, what about you, Chris? You're definitely, you seem to be really into it.
I'm a fairly new person when it comes to cosplay. I mean, I've been part of like a few cosplay groups, and I have a lot of cosplay friends. But last year I went to NC Comic Con in Durham, North Carolina. And, I think a week or so before I saw Doctor Strange, and, while watching it, I'm a huge fan of Stranger Things.
Oh, absolutely. That's
I was
so good.
Watching it, and they said the Eye of Agamotto, and I was like, Agamotto. And then while I'm watching the movie, I'm like, oh, I could do Doctor Stranger Things. Because
I think that was brilliant.
And I'm a huge fan of like mashups. I mean, I've been to going to like Dragon Con for like the last like 10 years or so. And I love mashup cosplays, like when people do like mashup cosplay. Like, I don't know if you saw like a year ago, someone did Edgar Allan Poe Dameron, where it was like a cosplay of Poe Dameron from Force Awakens and Edgar Allan Poe. And I thought that was so brilliant. I just love those kind of mashups. And so when I came up with the idea, you know, I thought, oh, instead of like his little spell thing that's on his hand, you know, I could create a shield that has the actual Christmas lights from Stranger Things. And of course I had to make the Eye of Agamotto, which is actually a real Ego, but it's spray painted. I still have it too. It hasn't molded. So, I did spray it with sealant. So I'm worried that one day I'm going to like pop it open and all green like gas is going to come out and I'm going to die. but yeah, I did that. And I put it together fairly quickly. My brother had actually cosplayed as 11 and had that 11 cosplay. And he's like, I don't want this anymore. And I was like, I'll take it. And so I mixed that and I got like a cape and then I made the boot. I did all these things. And I went to NC Comic Con and I only cosplayed it like part of like the, I think Friday or Saturday.
Right.
And after that, I had people contact me. He's like, you're on the front page of Reddit.
What?
Oh, shit. Really? Yeah.
Read it twice in the same day, and then it like, you know, sci-fi sites started posting about it. And then like the guy who co-wrote Doctor Strange tweeted my picture. He's like I was hoping somebody would cosplay a version of this.
that's just instant street
and crit. And the funny thing is I went to Dragon Con and that guy was at Dragon Con and I got my picture in my Doctor Stranger Things outfit with him.
Holy shit.
And so I went viral for like a few weeks.
Hell yeah.
People from like Venezuela and I had people from other countries that were contacting me saying like I was like this surgeon who just, you know, who just cured cancer.
Right. You know?
It's like, the internet. Oh my God, your cosplay is brilliant. You know, oh, thank you for doing that. It's like, you know, you've given me a reason to live, right? You know, it's just like how these people give me compliments. And I was like, I'm wearing a pink skirt, you know, it's like a pink dress. And it's like if I'd known I was going to get any compliments, I'd be wearing that all the time.
Right.
I've gotten more fame for that than I've gotten anything I've done with my films. So it's weird. Somebody's like, hey, this is Chris. It's like, oh, you might know him from like, he cosplayed as Doctor Strange and thinks, that was him?
Oh my gosh.
And one person, like, over Christmas, was like, my family members were showing me this picture of this cosplay of this guy called Doctor Strange who thinks, and he's like, I know that guy. You know, so it's it's weird how I did the silly things. I thought it made me laugh. Uh-huh. I didn't really expect to be, you know, known for it. But yeah, so I ended up like, oh crap. It's like, I always joked about people who made cosplay pages, and now I have a cosplay page, Dr. Stranger Things cosplay. So it's just a funny thing that, like, it's funny how, like, you know, and I think this is a good way to live in general. It's like, just do stuff that's fun. Cause you know, yeah. If you do stuff that's fun, there's more passion around that than there is something where you're trying to go viral, trying to be famous. And, you know, I've never felt like, it's funny because I went to an anime convention near DC last year, and one of the girls is getting jealous because people are wanting to take their picture with me more with her. She had like some skippy, you know, anime, you know, Asian schoolgirl outfit or whatever.
Right.
And I was laughing because I thought that was hilarious that she wanted to take a picture with me and my goofy Doctor Stranger Things mashup. So like, yeah, it's.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's really opened my eyes, you know, because I have a lot of creative interests, you know, and I've always wanted to do cosplay, but I didn't think, like, I don't know how to sew. I have to glue everything together. So it became a really nice thing that shows that, like, hey, you do something fun, maybe people will notice, you know, and it's funny how I'll still go to conventions and I'll have kids and adults come up to me like, that's brilliant, man. You made my day. And that's like, oh, it's the best feeling in the world.
All right. Let's talk briefly, about Gut Punched a little bit. Let me ask you, what was your experience like, Chris, directing your latest film? How did it compare, I guess, with your past endeavors?
It was very stressful, but every film set is stressful. Mainly because we had such a tight deadline.
Right. What was the deadline for that movie?
Well, here's the thing. There's a scene where Sarah Gorski, who played the main character, Kamantra, she, her character, there's a scene where her head, you know, she has that scene where she just pops into frame and she's got like the horns coming out of her eyes, that sort of like nightmare scene.
Right, yeah. Right, right.
So we had to figure out a way to mold her head for that scene.
Oh, shit.
So she's in L.A.
Uh-huh.
My effects guy, Sean Kromholtz, he's in like Charleston, South Carolina.
Uh-huh.
So we're trying to figure out, we were actually trying to find an effects artist in LA that could, you know, do the mold and then send the mold to us. But because of time constraints and because, you know, a few of them were like actually wanting like a good amount of money to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, it just seemed crazy. And then Sarah, who, like I said, she flew down on her own dime, and I'm really appreciative of that. I met her at a film festival many years ago, New York City Horror Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
She had a film there. And we're like, hey, and so I became friends with her, and it's like, we're always talking about wanting to work together. And she's like, I really want to be in your film and stuff. So she's like, what I'll do is I'll fly down and I'll stay for like a week. Mm-hmm. So she stayed at my house for like a week.
Oh shit.
And then Sean came over and did the head mold in my house, in my kitchen,
mm-hmm.
part of it in my kitchen and then living room. So did the mold there, and he took it back and then worked on that. In the process of making the mold and stuff with the horns, he had a couple of problems with it not working properly, you know, with any kind of effects type stuff, that sometimes it can be very fragile.
Right.
So because of the timeline, he's still working on the gut thing too. He really didn't get it as done in time. He was supposed to have it done by Friday, and because of just time constraints, just things not working out the way they needed to, he wasn't able to get the effect stuff for us until Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
He basically, his wife had to drive him. Geez. He had no sleep.
Oh, no.
And Sunday is the day that we filmed the final scene.
Oh, yeah, okay. Sunday is the day when we have, you know, all the main cast. You know, we have six or seven girls,
mm-hmm.
You know, Tom, we have Sarah. We had to we had to reconfigure stuff at the last minute. Just get everything in, and it became a little bit more stressful. I mean, we shot a lot of the sex stuff on Friday.
Okay.
So we had to make sure we had a limited amount of people.
Yeah.
And we shot the other stuff with them that happens before that, I think on Saturday. Sunday he had to do like the effect stuff on the horns, and it took so long it cut into us being able to shoot the stuff in the living room. And then he had to set up the body for the living room. Mm-hmm. And so we were shooting until like early into the morning. In fact, I think Sarah didn't get any sleep. She had to fly out Monday morning.
Oh, wow.
And so she got dressed and took an Uber to the airport and didn't have sleep. And I always feel bad when it, you know, cause I felt bad for, you know, actresses and stuff, because mm-hmm. It was kind of, I guess it was fun for them. Maybe they get to hang out and chill and be, you know, like girl bond or whatever.
Well, they are drinking punch out of a guy's stomach. So yeah, they're bonding.
we actually did kind of bond sort of. I know that. So myself and two other of the actresses who were in Gut Punched mm-hmm. have been, since then, we've kind of been involved in a bunch of other similar types of projects in the North Carolina film scene. Like, okay. I know, myself, Anna, and Easton, who were all in the film. I know Anna and Easton have been in a film together since Gut Punched. Myself and Anna were also in a student film together from High Point University called Retribution.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like we've all gone out for some of the same roles auditioning as well. Mm-hmm. So, but we all keep in touch with each other somewhat, and it's pretty cool. I think we all had a pretty good experience on the film. It wasn't too bad for us. I think it was more, we could tell that like most of the rest of the crew and the actors were like getting pretty busted. But mm-hmm. in my experience since then, like every film set is usually around a 12-hour day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It was getting, you know, and because we covered everything in the space, it made it very hot. So we had to bring fans in when we weren't shooting. And because my air conditioning was just like, fuck you, Chris. we're not going to run. I'm not going to run for all these people in your house. But we worked it out. I mean, I'm kind of like heartbroken because there's Noblins to this film,
mm-hmm.
Which still has that connection because one of the actors is in it, if you pay attention.
Right.
Yeah.
There was a scene where they were going to feed Rex's junk to Nobby, but we had to cut it for time because
Oh, damn it.
I keep meaning to wanting to like shoot a little like Marvel type stinger at the end where they feed him,
oh,
feed it to
amazing.
I may add that at some point. I will say, you know, our cast of actresses, they all did really well. Grace, all of them, you know, just going with the flow and
mm-hmm.
going at it, you know, because we were shooting late into the night, and I felt kind of bad because we had like Carrie Jones, just like the oldest of the cast members, and I could tell that she was.
She's awesome though, so she's awesome. Like super cool no matter what.
Yeah, and it was kind of cool because, you know, I had this friend of mine, Sky Bedell, who's a makeup artist, and I had her come out and sort of add little gothy nuances to their makeup. So
was the one that was in the wheelchair, right?
Carrie Jones is the one that was in the wheelchair.
Right. Yeah. Okay. She was amazing.
Yeah. The scenes with her kept cracking us up.
Yeah.
It's just the way she would like be so happy drinking all that straw.
her level of exuberance and excitement was like really infectious.
Uh-huh.
Oh, although I will say, having a group of ladies, you know, they come in, I had to do so much stuff with the audio because Easton. Mm-hmm. Her screams are just so high pitched. But that because they're that scene where they all come into the room,
uh-huh.
Everybody's like, screen. And like, I know the audio person would look over at me just shaking her head like, have fun with this audio, dude.
Yeah, it's really squealing.
But you know, it the thing is though, filming it and stuff is very natural, and there were certain things that just made for fun scenes, because the cast in general, I mean the whole I want to give too much away about it, but the whole chug scene was very funny,
right?
Made us laugh. And then like there's a scene where we made it up on the spot, and that's the thing where they do like this thing where they like,
I was gonna say about the salute to Lilith Prime. We all like, kind of like that was sort of a brainstorm among several people who were there at the set. We kind of like incorporating these sort of symbolic feminine gestures into this special salute that we all give to Carrie Jones, which turned out to be a really cool moment, I think.
Absolutely.
Well, let's jump into this week's main event with My Bloody Valentine. So that's the movie we're discussing for this week. Both Chris and Grace were courteous enough to watch it so they can give their input on it with us. So I think this will be the fun part. We'll jump into it.
I feel like this is a perfectly topical movie for
Valentine's Day.
Well, Valentine's Week.
Yeah, it's Valentine's Week. Everybody's either celebrating, what was it, Singles Awareness Day, or enjoying it with a loved one, or, well, you know, some people are doing both, I guess. Yeah.
There's also Galentine's Day, which is the day before Valentine's Day, where you celebrate it with your lady friends.
Yes. Again, my wife was very excited about that.
I got a card.
Did you?
I did.
Who?
Angelica.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got one, too, from New York.
But I feel like if you're curmudgeon-y and alone on Valentine's Day, or if you're in a relationship, this movie is perfect.
Yeah, it just covers everything, honestly. Like I said, this is the 1981 version of the film. It's one that I think Chris said he had watched it recently. I know Grace watched it. Well, I guess hadn't seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
And the three of us hadn't watched it for like several years at least.
So I hadn't seen it since the extended version came out. I think that was like 2009 or something like that, 2010. Yeah. So I rewatched it when that came out.
But, oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen it since then.
It's been about a decade for me. So this was like watching it like brand new again for the first time. And I got to say, this film really, like in terms of like offbeat slasher films, this really holds up, I think. What about you, Chris and Grace? What do you think? Do you think it holds up in terms of slasher flicks?
It was very interesting. It seemed to follow a lot of the formula of the slasher flick really well. But like I like bad movies, and this also followed the formula a lot of the bad movie things really well, and so I enjoyed it on that level.
I really did too. What about you, Chris? Did you do you think it holds up after all these years? I mean, compared to some of the modern horror that's come out.
I think it definitely for that time period, it definitely does something a little bit different. It's not like based on like, you know, teenagers. It's almost like a male version of Happy Days in parts.
Yeah, it really is.
And then there's like one part where they're like, the one guy and the girl's like near the ocean or whatever, and it turns into almost like a really bad soap opera. But I think like most slasher films, it comes down to sometimes like the kills and that kind of thing. And there are some really I think some of the kills still sort of like keep it above water when it comes to it being good. I mean, I think a lot of the character stuff is kind of cheesy and stupid, and it's like, it's not as interesting, you know? But when it comes to the kills and stuff, like, I mean, I always remember one of the famous kills is the one where the girl's in the dryer.
Right.
Oh God.
Mabel. Poor Mabel.
Oh God. Yeah. Mabel. Yeah. Or, I mean, and there's some really effective scenes. Like I really love this scene where the girl is in that place with all the clothing and stuff hanging up, and the stuff keeps dropping down. So it's a very effective. And then she basically gets turned into a head sprinkler. So yeah, I mean, you have a lot of really interesting things like that, or you have the two kids that are making out in the mine and they get screwed literally. So there's some really interesting. I think one of the worst ones is the guy that gets the nail gun into his head.
Oh, twice.
Oh yeah, he just like stumbles,
turns
back.
Into a vegetable halfway through.
He was my favorite character too.
So the kills, I think, for me are the main reason to revisit it.
That was the guy with the big old mustache.
Yeah,
right?
Hollis.
Yeah,
the
young Wilford Brimley.
Yeah. He wanted to make sure everyone had a fucking blanket when they went down to the mine. He was a nice guy.
He was great. The only fat Canadian.
I feel like the opening scene kind of set the tone because that first the woman, she's like taking off her clothes with the gas mask guy and it's like getting all erotic and stuff. Like, this is the very beginning of the movie and I'm just over here like, oh, totally. I hang out in my underwear at the bottom of a mine all the time.
Oh, absolutely. So I have a question about that. Do you guys think that is Harry Warden down there with her? Or is that
the first kill?
The first kill. The pre-scene kill. Is that Harry Warden or is that not Harry Warden? I guess.
That's got to be Harry Warden, right? That's got to be
Didn't they say
kill, right?
at the end of the film that Harry Warden died 5 years ago?
Yeah.
So it would have to be.
Oh, yeah. I guess it would have to be Axel.
And the woman looked more modern. Like.
Yeah, she did look more. Oh, that's the thing is I couldn't. I was trying to figure out whether or not.
At the beginning, like before
That supposed to be a kill that we saw from like when the original one happened 20 years beforehand? Or was that supposed to be a kill that precedes everything that's going on now?
Right. See, that's how I took it. Was that that's?
I was more interested in the fact that how exact he could be with stuffing that spike through that very point of the small heart in her breast.
Right.
I was like, that takes some talent. That's like Olympic size talent there, right?
I mean, honestly, the efficiency with which
Olympic woman staking.
Oh yeah.
Also efficiency topical.
Yeah. I can't even get my fitted mattress, like my fitted sheet on my mattress.
Right.
That guy's talented.
Well, we've kind of already covered our favorite kills.
Mine was definitely when the bartender got the pick through the eye and his eyeball.
Oh, all right. Yeah, it was tied for me.
That was a great kill, but I was so angry about that.
Why?
That guy was
because
a dick.
He was a dick, and he totally deserved it. But so I watched the theatrical release originally, but before the cast started tonight, I watched the extended cuts of all the kills. But even in the theatrical release, you see this guy just angrily trying to scare a bunch of kids, and he keeps opening the door for this fucking pickaxe to open up, and just laughing maniacally.
Yeah, that's true.
About a like attempted homicide when one of these kids gets axed in the face. And he would have been totally fine if he just kept walking when he turned away from the door. But no, he had to go back and check it
one more time.
And that was my least favorite kill just because it seemed the least organic, I guess.
Okay.
Like, that one seemed forced.
He just kind of seemed like a drunk bartender to me.
Yeah,
he was a drunk bartender.
Oh, yeah.
And
so
it's like,
did I
lock the door
jerk.
Or not?
Yeah. Oh, he was definitely a dick.
I mean, he got what he deserved. Mm-hmm. You know? And
absolutely.
I feel like he's been like, you know, rallying up these kids for the longest time, hoping that probably that scenario could come about so he could do that to scare the shit out of them. And then he basically gets it for that reason.
And he'd be like, I'm right.
What happened to just like hooking up a bucket of water above the door that dumps on people when they open it?
It's not as funny. Murder's funny.
Murder's way funnier.
Do you know that he was in Black Christmas as a search party person?
Oh, really?
He had like a super minimal role.
I did not.
All Canadians and horror movies are connected. There's only 8 people in Canada, and they're all in the same movies.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, for me, it was tied between that Happy's pickaxe death and Madame Mabel floating around in the dryer.
Poor Mabel. She looked like shit.
When you opened that dryer, though, I couldn't help it. Like,
my vote is for the dryer too.
Okay.
Oh man, that was so perfect.
It's kind of ironic.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Really, it kind of is. How did you guys feel about TJ as a main character? Did you guys think that he was justified in being jealous of Axel? Coming back from his failed attempt
at the oil mines.
Yeah, and just broken and defeated and just coming back and expecting his woman to be his woman. When he comes
to
back.
Be honest, I gave no fucks about the romantic plotline of this film.
Oh, really? I actually was pretty enthralled by it for some stupid reason.
Palmer loves a good love triangle.
I'm with Grace on this.
I was more annoyed by the girl's kind of behavior of just like not wanting. I felt like she was being very sort of passive. I don't know. She is kind of. I guess TJ is sort of telling her as the movie goes along, you know, do what you want to do. But in a way, he's maybe also sort of putting words in her mouth or right. something because of what he wants. But it seems like she does like him better from the scene where she's all crying and stuff.
Right.
So I don't know. But it was sort of annoying to me how she's sort of doormat-y.
Right.
But I will say in her defense, at least when her friend Patty is over there next to the dead body, like, no, I don't want to leave him.
Yes.
And the killer is coming. At least she's like fucking slapping that bitch. Like,
get
no.
together, Patty.
Come on. Yes, you can do it.
She
come
kept
on,
her shit together.
Me
Grace.
In the movie.
Grace, I wish you could see the gestures that Alex is making right now. She's giving you like those preach hands, you know, just like,
yes!
just like
I was
totally
yelling
agree.
At her. I'd be like, bitch, get the fuck on the move.
I ain't got time to cry no. in those slasher films. I'd be running.
My least favorite thing about TJ, I think, was because all of the other actors were at least Canadian. And TJ was from London. So even in trying to have like a Canadian maritime accent, he was an epic fail.
I had no idea where that accent was coming from.
He had a little bit of like an Irish accent.
Right?
You know, so I was like, and I think that's my biggest problem. It's like his accent was like back and forth.
Uh-huh.
And then he was like the least manly guy that you think could probably win over.
Right?
Because he had almost like a high-pitched nasally voice.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't even know why this girl liked him. And why is he working in the mine? He's like probably the least manly of all those guys that are in the mine.
And did you guys
so,
notice how
I don't know. It just, I really... Yeah, his character annoyed me.
He was always clean, so too, before everyone else was.
Yeah, he was
everyone
so
else was still dirty from the mines, and he was already showered.
So going back to knowing how he was the least manly of all the people there, the only way to know that it was a different day in that movie is you saw TJ in the same black and blue flannel,
right.
but
yeah.
the next day he had his ascot on like he was fucking
did.
Fred from Scooby-Doo.
And he had at least, what,
and it, and
six
every,
buttons?
Every scene he undid another button.
That and he was always the times where he was always being a dick. He was always playing whatever that weird game was of like balls or whatever on the table or whatever.
Oh yeah,
and he'd always be a dick without looking at them, you know, because he's trying to be all dramatic.
Yeah, he'd just be like, I don't care. What was it like? It's like a variation on like skee ball, but with like bumpers and like.
Oh, it's like shuffleboard.
Yeah. But it's like a
curling.
Guess, like, so sure. Yeah.
Board we're gonna curling. Keep it Canadian and topical.
Let's see. So Alf Humphreys unfortunately passed.
When I had a thought about TJ, since we're talking about him,
yeah.
I kind of thought that he was supposed to be the killer for a while. Mm-hmm. And like he was secretly the killer and he was just going switching.
Yep, definitely. I thought
but
the
then
same thing.
He finally was in a scene with the killer, and I was like, ah. Mm-hmm. I thought they were going to pull, like, the M. Night Shyamalan twist or something.
Right.
Well, actually, I mean, that's the good thing, actually. We could jump right into that, actually. I think one of the best things about this movie is, like, so, like I said, it had been probably over a decade for me since I last saw this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I genuinely, like, couldn't remember who the killer was at the end. And the movie does a really, really good job of kind of holding that back and serving that twist. So
right.
I guess ultimately the question is, how do you guys feel about
the ending?
What's that?
The ending.
Yeah. The ending, the twist at the end. How do you guys feel about it?
For the most part, I did not realize it was the first time I watched it. I did not realize it was him until when he got super mad and started to fight TJ at the party.
Oh right.
And then he kind of went outside and sat on like the milk crate by himself, and then you never saw him again.
Yeah.
He was like, remember, really angry and drunk.
Yeah.
And then I was like,
well, you see him in the mines again later.
That's right. And then
he falls into the
and then
like,
he's gone. And I feel like at that one point when he like isolated himself from the rest of the party guests.
Yeah.
He didn't have any hot dogs. He didn't have
Superman takes time to get into his costume.
Right.
But that could have been a classic red herring right there,
well, and
too.
That's kind of what I thought. But that's when I started to become suspicious. Because, like Grace, I also thought for a while that it was TJ. Like he.
That's what I. That's like. I swore up and down. I was like, "Oh man, yeah. If I remember this, it's totally TJ. It's totally TJ the entire time." And then it gets to the end, and it's just Axel, and I'm like, "Son of a bitch!"
I remembered it was Axel, and I was watching it earlier this week, and my wife saw me watching kind of when they go outside of the party and they're getting into a fight,
right?
And she's like, "I bet he's the killer." I was like, "No, he's not." But it's been long enough since I saw it that and part of it, I guess, is because Alf Humphrey died last week and we talked about him a bunch last week. So I was thinking about that. The scene in the mines towards the end where he runs away.
Right.
And you don't see him at all the rest of the movie. Mm. I was like, I feel like I know Axel's the killer, but maybe it's been long enough that I forgot.
Yeah, I just didn't remember that detail at all. What do you guys think about the twist? Did you like it? Did you see it coming?
I didn't see it coming. I was kind of surprised again that it wasn't TJ. So I was a little bit impressed with the movie for doing something sort of unexpected. But at the same time, it was also kind of very black and white, like Axel, bad guy.
Right.
TJ, yeah. Good guy.
Uh-huh.
I was really a little bit amazed by that like lightning fast montage of his childhood and the psychological explanation of why he's doing this. Like they just boom right there, psychology.
I love that they so much were like, oh yeah, his dad died that day.
It's almost like we should have known.
And everyone's like, oh yeah, yeah, I forgot about that.
Did any of the victims have kids? Yeah. Let's forget about it for 20 years.
Right? I never mentioned that at any point. Like,
did you guys not fucking know that?
What about you, Chris? How'd you feel about it?
I mean, I think they do an effective job of trying to throw you off the scent, you know, by giving you different options that sort of whittles down to who it is in the end. I mean, it does have that sort of, although it does feel like one of those things to where they just, you know, threw the sort of thing on at the last minute or something, you know, it was sort of a thing that you find during that era of films, you know, like movies like Sleepaway Camp or something, you know, where they throw... This is the reason that this guy did this.
Right,
know? And,
right.
And it just seems like it's, you know, it's such a sort of flippant way of like just throwing out that this is the reason he did it. And but there's really no, yeah, there's not enough really fleshed out background to it to sort of like to cement it so much to where it makes as much sense.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It almost it feels like one of those things like we want to throw you off of who's doing it. So this is what happened. And so.
Right.
Yeah, they could have easily just, you know, took extra scenes from that initial flashback thing towards the beginning, you know, of that when they're talking about what happened or whatever, and just like, oh, this would be a good way we can make audiences throw them off of what we're going to do.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it sort of works, you know, because it's not as, because you have some films that are very obvious about it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's like, there are certain things where it's like, wow, it takes a lot of time to get into that outfit. This isn't like, you know, throwing on a piece of underwear.
Right.
You know, you gotta put on that mask, you know, set the light up, you know, and then you get a kill and then you get back out of it. So I really love to see some scene where they got like they're playing like Benny Hill music or something. While he's, it's just like, you know, he's probably practiced that over time. You know, he's like timed himself.
Right.
You have to do like a Rocky montage where they show him building up to the point where he can get out of that suit in like 5 seconds.
Right.
I think that's like the sort of kind of like I don't know if, you know, you really have time to show up here and there and do that kind of thing. But yeah, you know, I think the ending works for what it is, because I even. You know, we did it for a podcast for Decades of Horror like last year or whatever, and I forgot again who the killer was.
Oh shit!
So I was like, oh, okay, because I'm like, oh wait a minute, who was the killer? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, that's the killer.
At any point, did anyone think that it was actually Harry Warden?
No. I never thought it was Harry Warden at all. At any point, they're absolutely convinced.
It was
like,
too convenient.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was also the obvious freaking red herring.
And he would have been really old too.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about Michael.
Yeah, that's true. He's not some supernatural being, right? He went to a mental institution. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, Alf Humphrey passed away last weekend.
Howard.
Yeah, he played Howard in this movie. Probably one of my favorite characters.
Really?
In the whole film. Yeah, I love Howard. Like,
is he the one in... Was it him juggling?
He's like the
funny guy.
Yeah, he's the funny guy. He's got the air horn at the beginning. He's just like the obnoxious... I don't know. I see a little bit of myself in him.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. I don't know whether or not to, like...
I hate
him. Happy about that or... But yeah, I really love that guy. And especially after learning how much stuff we kind of like had seen him in after talking about it last week and how many other films he's been a part of. How did you think about his role? Did you think that the comic relief was necessary? Did you find him endearing?
So I although I did find him annoying, I feel like that was kind of the point.
Right.
And I feel like in every group dynamic, there is always that one person who is the clown. And sometimes...
Why are you looking at me like that?
I'm looking at him, and he's looking at you.
I just don't want to make eye contact because she's throwing stones at
me. But I found his character very endearing. I loved his outfits. Everyone else was very muted in their...
Yeah,
like a lot of flannel, a lot of like grays and blues, and he was like wearing yellow and red, and he just, I don't know, he seemed like he had a good fucking time.
What about you, Sam?
I'm pretty sure that the party that they had just followed him. Like, I'm pretty positive that if he was by himself, it would have been an awesome rager.
Yeah, maybe.
He would have just been, like, juggling beers to himself.
He
would have
just been standing by himself.
Oh, my God. He's magical.
How about you guys? What do you think about Howard? Grace, what did you think about Howard?
I honestly didn't really, like, catch him in the film. I still, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I
got attention to the side characters.
Okay, so. What about you,
terrible,
Chris?
I'm a terrible movie viewer.
Well, in the Mill version of Happy Days, he's Ralph the Mouth.
Yeah. Oh my God, yes.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, or the jokey character in Stephen King's It or any of that kind of stuff.
Right,
he's
right.
Definitely the one who's annoying, but, you know, he's also trying to, like, whenever... So the shit hits the fan and people are fighting. He's the one that's trying to get people back on track. Like, oh yeah, you're funny. Let me.
He snorts coke up his nose.
Yeah. That was like, okay, stop
doing that.
Because first of all, you know, alcohol will go straight into your system much more because of these sensitive things in your nose. And secondly, it just that seems like a very painful way.
It does.
I felt like you kept doing that over and over. It's like
he
stop
did it in both nostrils. I was like, stop! Don't do that.
Yeah, it's kind of gross.
And his kill was funny too because I feel like there was at some point in the movie, I think it was Hollis who said like. I don't remember the exact quote, but something like your head will pop off or whatever. And when he died, his head pop off. Yeah.
Howard died?
What?
Yeah.
Who? Oh yeah. He's the one who falls from the mine shaft and
he gets
decapitated.
Yeah, he gets decapitated.
And there was some line about.
That kill was also gnarly,
that was
by
pretty
the way.
Good. And I feel like, and it well, was, sorry, go ahead.
Well, it's also foreshadowed.
Oh,
at
absolutely.
A time he sticks his head down.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, when he tries to scare everybody. Maybe that's why I was getting it confused.
Yeah.
But my favorite character by far was, I love Mabel.
But she dies so early.
Yeah, Mabel was pretty badass.
She was. She
loved Valentine's Day,
she decorated that town so nice for that party.
They wanted a party just for her.
And she was trying to get her Valentine, too.
Mm-hmm. She had a crush on that sheriff.
Yeah, I forgot about that. She did.
That's like one of my favorite moments in the film when he finally gets her box of chocolates after he's found her in the dryer, and he's like, God Mabel.
He doesn't cry. She was
hot. She was hot for him.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. In more ways than one.
Somebody
the dryer
a
is warm.
Right, timestamp that. We got to put a snare roll right there.
I do have the quote though. I just found it. So Howard would lose his head if it wasn't attached. And then he lost his head.
So you guys have any ending input on this film, Grace?
Well, I was told before watching the film, I mentioned to some of my friends that I was going to be on this podcast and review this movie, and they told me, well, it's certainly a movie, and I cannot argue with that.
So what rating would you give it out of 5?
Five what's like five
five five
OMGs,
stars,
five stars,
five stars. Five slashy
no,
axe
five
picks.
Pickaxes. Yeah, five
pickaxes. Out of pickaxes, I will give it 5 out of 5 pickaxes.
Boom.
Oh, stars, perfect. I don't know, but 5 out of 5 pickaxes, 100%.
All right, what about you, Chris?
I mean, I think for the kills themselves, I'll say 3 out of 5.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Quentin Tarantino, actually, this is his all-time favorite slasher film.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I think the kills are pretty iconic. I think a lot of the characters in it and the interactions are a little bit dated and not as sort of fun as it's one of those things. It's almost like you know, Friday 13th films. It's like let's get to see who mm-hmm. who gets it next.
Right.
So I think it's definitely has some very iconic and well done kills, and I think that's the main reason to watch it. You know, the other stuff is not as good.
Not as good.
I will say though, I want that VW Beetle truck.
Right?
Oh, that was dope.
Is that what brought it up to 5 pickaxes for you? Was
the yes, definitely.
What about you, Alex? What do you think?
So I think I would give this a strong 4 out of 5
okay.
pickaxes. For me, I feel like this is a quintessential Canadian horror movie.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Which I really appreciate. And I feel like the small town charm, like that really resonated with me. And uh-huh. I know the character dialogue was corny, but I liked it. and I just a little like, you know, sidestep little fact is that the mine that they were working in wasn't an abandoned mine, right?
Yeah.
And
so you guys cleaned it up for them before
which
they
is
got
the
in
quintessential
there.
Canadian.
You guys are too nice.
Like they spent $50,000 cleaning
Alex
up the
Canadian.
Old
you're,
Alex is Canadian.
So polite.
They did. They spent the $50,000 cleaning up the mine for them, and they're like, God damn it, I'm gonna spend more money to just put but I feel I liked that it was blue collar workers mm-hmm. and not teenagers living in the suburbs.
Right.
I felt like part of the town when I was in the town, and I thought the
That's
kills
true.
And, I, and, I, and I liked the kills.
Yeah,
I
it definitely had
good.
That community.
There's
feel.
Actually a lot of small details that really like help boost that too. Like for instance, there's the scene where like I think it's like right before Axel and TJ almost get in their first like fisticuffs.
Mm-hmm.
There's a scene where one of the workers is coughing. Mm-hmm. Like pretty significantly, like
right.
as
yeah,
he's
it's like
from
he's
the
in the
mine.
Mine,
and there's like all sorts of just small details yeah. like embedded throughout the film that really help bring
right.
out the life.
And
of,
besides
of the town.
TJ's accent, I found all of their other accents, their maritime accents, even though none of them are from Maritimes, they were pretty spot on.
Oh yeah,
and I didn't realize how Canadian it sounded until I hadn't lived in Canada for a while.
Oh, shit.
I yelled at Ben. I was like, "Holy shit!"
I didn't realize how Canadian you were until right now.
Right. So for me, I don't know. It's maybe a little bit of nostalgia, even though I'm not from the Maritimes. But I really like this movie. I give it 4 out of 5 pickaxes.
What about you, Sam?
I'm gonna give it 4. I'm okay. gonna subtract a half a point for the kills not using pickaxes, which were dope. But still not pickaxes. And then I'm going to subtract another half of that axe for the sequel that should have been that never was.
R.I.P. to the sequel.
Oh, yeah. There was supposed to be a
what
part
What was it supposed
two.
To be called again? It had a name and everything.
That name was really bad. I remember
it was
that
not
name
a
was
great
really
name.
Bad.
It was
the Return
like,
of the Miner.
Yeah,
Return of
that's
the Miner.
It's such a bad
Well, originally the film was supposed to be called The Secret.
That's right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, the first one was. That's why the theme song has the
mm-hmm. They wanted to get onto that holiday horror hype train though.
Right.
Choo choo.
I mean, that makes sense. It was a cash cow at that point, right? I mean, the backlash from Silent Night Deadly Night hadn't exploded on everybody yet.
How many pickaxes would you give it, Sam or Palmer?
I would give it a 4.5.
4 out of 5 pickaxes?
No. A 4.5.
Well,
sorry.
Oh,
five.
Wow. 4.5.
Yeah, I really do like this movie a lot. In fact, like, upon... I don't know why I haven't really seen it a lot in the past few years, but, like, upon subsequent viewings, like, mm-hmm. this might get added to my regular rotation.
It's a great classic
it is.
Slasher film.
It's
yeah.
It's quintessential 80s horror.
If you like 80s horror and that's what you're going for, especially like the uncut kills.
Yes.
Oh, man. But there's some brutal ones. I mean, just talking from...
They're way better.
Chris was talking about, you know, the accuracy of being able to put the pickaxe through the heart mm-hmm. of the very first kill. I mean, like from the opening scene, like I was just like, wait a minute. wait a minute, I'm in for something special here. And then, you know, what's his name? Happy's pickaxe through the head with the eye pops out at the end.
Right.
And I mean, and Madame Maybelle being in the dryer. I mean,
R.I.P. Maybelle.
I don't know. Like, I think it's one of those movies that, like, starts off really, really creative with its kills and starts off awesome. And as it continues on, it starts to get a little more tired and, like, starts to run out of ideas. But I think one of the best parts is something that we haven't really talked about yet. Like, with the twist, him like cutting off his own arm at the very end, and kind of like wandering into the into the mines, cackling into himself, singing and singing
his songs,
things.
His love songs. Will to you be Sarah, my bloody right? Valentine?
Yeah, 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 and bringing up the title of the movie.
Perfect.
And
you're like, oh, what movie was I watching again?
I don't know. Just from start to finish, I was really really enthralled by this one. I really enjoyed it. I was not expecting to because I don't remember liking it this much when I watched it first time. And I wasn't expecting it to like it this much this time, but I really enjoyed it.
I will watch it again this time next year.
Exactly. I'll put it in my holiday rotation.
So on to the housekeeping. To keep up with all the latest Dead Meat information, you can follow the cast on its official accounts on Twitter and Instagram at Dead Meat Cast. You can also reach us by email at cast@dead-meat.com. You can follow us individually, too. I'm at Sturmsworth.
I'm on Twitter at Aluders.
And I'm on the Twitters at Sam Heebs with a Z.
You're on the Twitters?
The Twitters.
Grace, I know you got a Twitter or Instagram account, too. Do you want to shout that out?
Yeah, I actually just got on Instagram, and fuck you can hit me at so.so.graceful.
Okay. I know you also have another movie that you're getting ready to star in.
Yeah, actually, if you go on my Instagram, you can see some cool shots from that. And I feel like that's going to be one that people who listen to this podcast and are fans of cheesy horror will really like, because it's called Tupperware from Another World.
I love that.
I think that the title of that kind of really says it all. Uh-huh. Yeah. So, but
it sounds like Killer's Clowns from Outer Space type of thing.
Yeah. And so the level of cheese on this one is going to be pretty high. So definitely check that out when it comes out.
All right. Chris, what about you, bud?
Yeah, some of my social media accounts you can would be I Like Films on Instagram, on Twitter, and Snapchat.
Might I say real quick, you have a very entertaining Instagram.
You do. Your Instagram is really good.
I know. I'm a weird person.
We're all weird people. That's awesome. That's perfect.
Also, you can follow our film Gut Punch on Gut Punch Film on Facebook. And let's see what is. Oh, you can follow my cosplay page, Dr. Stranger Things. What else?
Isn't there a way for people to donate to Gut Punched?
Oh yeah.
You can contact me. I mean, we're still looking for people if they wanted to give some extra money. We are sort of like we're looking for like associate producers. Mm-hmm. So you can contact me about that. Also, our theme song, Gut Punched, you can buy it on iTunes.
I love that song. It got stuck in my head for like a week.
I co-wrote some of the lyrics. So,
no shit.
So did you really?
I'm a songwriter.
You're a songwriter now. You're so talented.
So, you can buy that. I'm a big fan of 80s hair band, 80s music in general. So we want to do like an 80s hair band song.
Perfect.
Well, I think you guys nailed it with that one.
Yeah. Chris, do you have any intentions to add a directing credit to a future movie as Dr. Stranger Things?
You know what? I want to do like a Dr. Stranger Things, like a, I want to do like a short film based on that character. So
you should do an obscure porn with a director's credit of Dr.
Set in the wine dungeon.
Yes. Set in the wine dungeon, please.
Wine dungeon, please. Yeah. Well, you know that for the people that don't know, Wine Dungeon is these wine people that are in my film Foodie, which
we're obsessed with.
We changed that because in the original script it was the Wine Nazis, and it's like, oh no, we can't, no, we're not gonna do that. Let's do something more sexual. I'm happy with doing that.
Right.
So I have to ask about Foodie though. One question. When he was in the bathtub, was that real ice or was that fake ice?
Oh God, yes! What a question.
You know what? The funny thing is, I wasn't originally supposed to direct that film.
Oh.
Eric Pruitt, who wrote it,
right.
He had a director and a producer that backed out of the project.
Oh, okay.
And he put out a call out for somebody to direct it, and I had a meeting with him, and he liked my ideas.
Uh-huh.
And so that was the first time I worked with someone other than me that I worked with, like a co-writer.
Okay.
And so the original directors wanted to put him in an actual tub full of ice.
Okay.
And I was like, yeah. But the funny thing is we found this company in California that make these little plastic globules that when you add water, they swell up.
Uh-huh.
And they use them around plants.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually used that in some Hollywood films. There was some Kristen Slater TV show they used it in. So we got like a bunch of those, and we had to make those overnight. And so we had to fill buckets. But the problem was the buckets that we had, it was cold outside. So we didn't realize that the water was going to be a little bit cold. And so we had
okay.
to keep, so it was a little bit cold.
Right.
The guy came out of the tub like twice. We shot that whole scene overnight.
Oh, wow.
the location we were supposed to shoot it in was this woman's house, and she came back early, and the bathroom we were going to shoot it in was her bathroom, her personal bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to move it to Eric Pruitt, who the writer, we had to move it to his house.
Okay.
We took everything out of his office. We shot from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. overnight. And so he came out of the tub twice, and he was like, some of his shivering was not acting. But we kept pouring hot water into it because I was like, I really don't want to do a film where the guy dies. So I had a little post-traumatic stress disorder with Tom when he was underneath the thing. We had a similar thing there is when we put the horns over her eyes, she couldn't see anything.
Oh.
And that sort of deprivation for a long time, she got a little emotional. And I felt really bad, and like, let's hurry up and shoot this so we can get those horns off of her eyes. So we didn't put real ice in it.
Okay, we definitely debated that while we were watching
we
it.
We did, probably for far longer than we should have, to be honest.
We added a lot of sound effects to make it sound like it was ice, and
okay.
It did look very realistic, but yeah, it was not real ice.
It did look very realistic.
And we didn't cut his kidney out either. That was...
Oh, well, shit.
Could have fooled me.
And we didn't pop the guy's eyes out on a corkscrew. That was fake, too.
Mm. Oh, that was awesome. The one-liner he delivered at the end of that was just primo, priceless material.
We almost stole a line from Dog Soldiers, because there was a line we cut out where he's like, I hope they give you the shits. and we didn't use it because it's from another movie.
So that wraps it up, I guess, for everything else. Don't forget to rate, comment, and subscribe on the cast. As always, thanks for listening to this week's episode. We'll be back next week with more horrific antics. And as always,
keep it creepy.
Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you guys very much for being a part of our podcast and being the first guest that we've ever had. And,
thank you so much for coming on. It was such a pleasure.
Yeah. It really was.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Anytime. I had a lot of fun.
All right. We'll see everybody next week.